Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And folks, it is now or never. We just wrapped up the Maryland debate. So we just got two more rubber stamp debates before we really get into the vigorously debated Constitution. Now, there were seven states that didn't do a lot of vigorous debates, but the other six states that did, and the reason why this is important, because however it was stipulated to one party in a compact, when you have multiple parties, and because of the uniformity requirement, the state could not and cannot treat one state differently than another state. And so what would happen is if if Massachusetts came along and they were one of the only states that actually stipulated that Congress would not be able to pass a law and immune themselves from that. So in other words, if Massachusetts came along and said, hey, look, Congress, you just passed a law, you know, like, you know, this retirement of these 401k, and you actually have immuned yourself with your own retirement system that you don't have to be suppressed by, you know, this oppressive, you know, law that you've created. What would happen is that, you know, Massachusetts would demand that their representatives know all representatives, because if it's stipulated by one, it is stipulated to all. And so just so you understand the importance of every single one of these ratification debates, because how they went through this, there's nothing but harmony in constraining this federal government. There was never a time to say, yeah, let's give the Supreme Court the ability to create law and amend the Constitution. I'm telling you now, folks, if the concept ever was floated during the ratification debates that the Supreme Court would be able to make change of what is constitutional, what isn't, taking that away from the states would have rejected the Constitution immediately on that premise, that the courts would never have that power. And yet today they've assumed that power because the states themselves have failed to do what they're supposed to be doing. And so we have Paul Venable back with us today. And I appreciate you coming back, Paul.
Thanks, G.R.
No problem. As a matter of fact, it actually helps to kind of create a conversation. One of the things, we're going to get into the New Hampshire debate. And this was supposedly the debate that met the nine. So the Constitution required nine states ratify. And at this point in time, the only states that really ratified were all small states except for Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. And technically, they weren't significant states in commerce. They weren't great port states. Massachusetts was so far to the north that it would have been unreasonable for, you know, Georgia to be able to haul. I mean, they really needed the Carolinas or Virginia to ratify so that it would be reasonable to be able to get, and Georgia had its own ports anyway, but some of these other smaller states, they were pretty dependent on the bigger states for moving commerce and so forth. But anyway.
You might even make an observation.
Go ahead. Absolutely. That's why I've asked you to be here. Absolutely.
Right. So, near the beginning of our last show, you were talking about how important it was for the small states that there was something particular that caused the small states to really accept this. And I don't think we specified what it was, but it's that the states had suffrage in the federal government. In other words, that they had their own representatives by senators, and which ameliorated their concerns about being outmaneuvered or outvoted by representatives. So we had something unique that I don't think had ever been created among the governments of the world, and that is representatives for the states,
right,
and representatives for the people,
right. So, excuse me. I kind of cover that when I talk about American republicanism, but and I may marginalize that when I say that the state's sovereignty is being protected in this new constitution, because that's exactly what it means, that the equal suffrage in the Senate means that the Senate actually can keep constraints upon the House of Representatives, which is a house that is based on population. So many of the bigger states would have more authority within that house. But if that house tried to create an advantage towards the big states in the Senate, that bill would be shot down and, you know, basically stopped, because the smaller states would actually be able to protect themselves from Congress or the House of Representatives being able to pass a bill that would give the advantage to the larger states.
Right on.
And so there was this duality, you know, the old duality of man, the duality of our government existed as well. And so the real concept that was so unique was this concept of representation in a Republican form of government, that one represented the people in the House, and the Senate was the representatives of the state legislatures, those who at the state level we had already made our sovereigns. So this is why I get into, you know, American republicanism in Republican form of government is not just representation of the people. We recognize that we create government and we make government sovereign over very specific things. And so those very specific things, they have the ultimate say. And that's why at the Senate level, they were able to make sure that, you know, the federal government could, and the larger states couldn't take advantage. So it's the checks and balances that were placed within this constitution, horizontally within government and vertically between the people, the counties, the states, and the federal government as well. So yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And this played out in the ratification of the Constitution, because the people chose delegates to debate the ratification. But then what happened, it was the states that became parties to the contract, to the compact, which made the Constitution.
Right, right. Now, one of the things that I want to point out that is really interesting, and here's New Hampshire that, you know, kind of followed Massachusetts. Because you got to remember, the New England states, if you look at all of the different colonies that turned into states, what states were created based on religious suffrage?
What
state? Okay, so many of the states were created for one purpose or another. A lot of states were created over commercial endeavors, like Virginia, the Carolinas, and so forth. Georgia was created as a commercial endeavor, but they used a penal colony kind of concept, because Georgia, they took the criminals out of, you know, because they were overcrowded in their jails. They said, if you want, we're going to give you an opportunity to become an indentured, you know, worker in Georgia, and we would give you 10 acres of land once you finish your time as an indentured servant. And so Georgia was founded on a commercial opportunity to have, you know, these criminals, the blue collar criminals or what have you, they were not really bad people. They weren't murderers and that type of stuff, but they were still criminals. And that's how Georgia was created. And it was a strategic play as well, because they wanted to have what they would consider the sacrificial lamb to protect the northern states. So this was the state of Georgia was a strategic play by the king in creating a state that would have a higher density of population. The majority of the population was an element of people that were questionable or you know, potential criminals, what have you. And so, you know, that's how they built that. And because the plots of land were to be 10 acres, not 100 or larger plantations, that they were, you know, to be maintained as smaller plots, it had a higher population density so that if the Spaniards came up from Florida, you know, Georgia would be the first to create resistance to keep the Spaniards from being able to go right up the coast. So anyway.
So I think I understand your question now.
Okay.
When you asked about religion among the New England states.
There you go.
Because a lot of them were based by community on a specific religion.
Yes, as a matter of fact, New Hampshire and Connecticut were two states, and Rhode Island is the third state, that were cast outs out of Massachusetts. So when Massachusetts had somebody that, you know, started differing in their preaching of doctrine, the Southern Baptist, I forget the guy's name, the birth of the Southern Baptist came out of Massachusetts, and that guy was kicked out of the state, went to Connecticut or Rhode Island, I forget which one, but, you know, and then created the Baptist Church. And another one went into New Hampshire and Rhode Island. So the northeastern states, the New England area, all of those colonies were established with charters that were based upon religious freedom and not necessarily commercial endeavor.
Correct.
And New York happens to be an interesting situation because it was a Dutch state. It was a Dutch colony. It used to be called New Amsterdam. That's right. And so as it was sitting an island for the Dutch colonies, and as we already have heard, you know, Dutch was a very rich nation. That was brought up in the Connecticut Oration by Ellsworth. And when we, you know, look at what happened to New York, it was the migration of people out of the other colonies that went into New York, and also the migration of people from England going into New York, that they literally took over the state of New York or New Amsterdam and made it a colony under the king, kind of sweeping it out from underneath Holland, and Holland lost presence in the New World. But with that, Paul, we're going into a break. So we'll come right back, and then we'll be able to dive into the New Hampshire ratification debates. Folks, hold on. We'll be right back after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, folks, thank you for your patience, Paul. So sure. One of the things, and the reason why we kind of went down this little tangent or this rat hole, is the very first or the second, the big bodied paragraph that comes up in this. And what I want to do is I just want to share this because they list the amendments. And Paul, I'll have you do those, the first, secondly, and all of that. But one of the things I think is really important for everybody to understand is the tone and the paradigm of the people in these different conventions. Their eyes were really looking at something completely different because they were a state with a completely different focus. They weren't all equally concerned about,
you know, slavery, commerce, and everything else. And New Hampshire was not a slave state. And anyway, this is what it says. The convention, having impartially discussed and fully considered the Constitution for the United States of America, reported to Congress by the Convention of Delegates from the United States of America and submitted to us by a resolution of the General Court of said state, passed the 14th day of December last, passed and acknowledging with grateful hearts the goodness of the supreme ruler of the universe in affording the people of the United States in the course of his providence an opportunity deliberately and peaceably without fraud or surprise of entering into an explicit and solemn compact with each other by assenting to and ratifying a new constitution in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity, do in the name and behalf of the people of the state of New Hampshire assent to and ratify the said Constitution for the United States of America. And as it is the opinion of this convention that certain amendments and alterations in the said Constitution would remove the fears and quiet the apprehensions of many of the good people of this state and more effectually guard against an undue administration of the federal government, the convention do therefore recommend the following alterations and provisions be introduced into the said Constitution. Now, I have to point out, Paul, do you see a period in that paragraph?
No, not at all.
That is one run-on sentence. But what's really important, and folks, I have to drive this point home, is clearly they were recognizing the divine hand of Providence's intervention and involvement in establishing this new government. Any thoughts, Paul?
I agree. Even though this is particularly expressed here in print,
yeah,
that seemed to be the mindset of everyone who lived through the Revolution, which frankly, Jared, we should not have won, considering that Great Britain was the most powerful military force on the planet at the time.
Right.
These people remember what they went through to get what they've got. And New Hampshire is expressing their gratitude for the divine hand of Providence.
Right. Yep. There we go. So with that, and as a matter of fact, we covered this with the proclamation, George Washington's first proclamation, and it was the first act, first voting that was unanimously done by Congress. I mean, you know, Congress very rarely unanimously does something. And actually, just recently, regarding the January 6th stuff, Congress had just unanimously acted. There wasn't one dissenting vote in this, you know, releasing of the tapes and releasing of the facts and so forth. Actually, it wasn't about January 6th. It was about COVID. You know, getting to right. The bottom of, you know, what happened with the COVID and, the, you know, ending the cover up. And so anyway,
I don't know when's the last time I saw something like that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, yeah. Now that we're at the point of the recommended amendments, Paul, if you go ahead and let's just start with the first and then we'll kind of editorialize, because what they do is they actually create the amendments, and I don't see anywhere where they kind of explain these amendments, you know, until kind of later. But anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. First, that it be explicitly declared that all powers not expressly or particularly delegated by the aforesaid Constitution are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised.
Okay, so see? The 10th Amendment again. And as right. a matter of fact, the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment was requested by every state in the Union. They all wanted that statement, even though during the ratification debates, the states were explicitly told that the Constitution enumerated very specific roles, responsibilities, powers, and property, and only those things does the federal government have the authority. They didn't need this language anymore because they created a specified power of attorney instead of a general power of attorney. But go ahead. What's the second one?
Secondly, that there shall be one representative to every 30,000 persons according to the census mentioned in the Constitution until the whole number of representatives amount to 200. Can I make a commentary?
Go ahead. Yes,
there?
Please.
So the original first amendment set that at one per 50,000. Okay, you know, it would ramp up until you had one per 50,000.
Right.
And you and I have discussed this before. What somewhere in the 1920s, Congress made a decision to cap that at 435. They didn't make an amendment. They didn't follow the Constitution. So in actuality, when I read this, our real representation should be this.
Right.
Which yes. would give us about 7,000 representatives.
Yes. So this reaffirms the fact that it requires an amendment to the Constitution to change the representation of persons and the apportionment of representation. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
So, thirdly, that Congress do not exercise the powers vested in them by the fourth section of the first article, but in cases when a state shall neglect to refuse to make the regulations therein mentioned and shall make regulations subversive to the rights of the people to a free and equal representation in Congress, nor shall Congress in any case make regulations contrary to a free and equal representation.
Okay, interesting, huh?
Yes, I think isn't this referring to setting that time and place of election?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is about the elections, and that basically they want to make sure that the federal government does not, you know, overstep its bounds and drive elections, you know, and take away the power of the states to control their own elections.
Right. That sounds familiar.
Yep.
Okay. Fourthly, that Congress do not lay direct taxes, but when the money arising from impost, excise, and their other resources are insufficient for the public exigencies, nor then until Congress shall have first made a requisition upon the states to assess, levy, and pay their respective proportions of such requisitions agreeably to the census fixed in the said Constitution in such way and manner as the legislature of the state shall think best, and in such case, if any state shall neglect, then Congress may assess and levy such states proportioned together with the interest thereon at the rate of 6% per annum from the time of payment prescribed in such requisition. That's a mouthful.
Right. And so here's an interesting thing, because what they actually did was they said, okay, if we owe taxes, then the interest rate on the taxes that we would have to pay would only be, they were creating a cap of 6% annual percentage rate.
You know, this points out something else. If I understand correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Congress taxed the states. So it was up to the states to collect their taxes however they chose to do so. But it appears to me that the federal government specifically taxed the states.
Yes, they directly taxed the states, correct.
Fifthly, that Congress shall erect no company of merchants with exclusive advantages of commerce.
Okay, Well, so here's an interesting thing, because the federal government didn't have the ability to create any company. It wasn't an enumerated power. So when you look at this amendment, it was creating an amendment like this, and the reason why this didn't get included would be it actually, you know, opens the door for the federal government to start playing around with companies and businesses and corporations.
You mean like what we're doing now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I can think of some instances where Congress is doing this, for example, to give certain industries protection against liability.
Yeah, like labor unions. I mean, they've given labor unions, because labor unions have become an activist arm of the federal government. And labor unions, based on how well they have supported the tyranny of the federal government, they're the ones that get the spoils. Mm-hmm. And they've created an incestuous relationship between, you know, and it all started with the Labor Party, or not the Labor Party, but the Department of Labor. Clearly, the federal government has no authority to regulate labor in any way. None. Okay. So, okay.
Okay. Sixthly, that no person shall be tried for any crime.
Paul, I hate to cut you off, but at this point, I've got music over drowning you, and I've got, you know, a hard break. So, folks, we're going to be right back with this Sixth Amendment from New Hampshire right after this promo. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so folks, we're back, and we still have Paul with us, right, Paul? You still there?
We're still here.
All right, awesome. So, folks, we were just getting into the sixth recommended amendment by New Hampshire. Go ahead, Paul.
Sixthly, that no person shall be tried for any crime by which he may incur an infamous punishment or loss of life until he first be indicted by a grand jury, except in such cases as may arise in the government and regulation of the land and naval forces.
Okay, so in other words, under martial law is when, you know, those exceptions can be made. However, no person can be tried for any crime by the federal government, you know, for a capital punishment without an indictment by grand jury.
Okay.
Now, remember, folks, that the Bill of Rights, one of the things I want to point out, that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states. This was just a protection from the federal government from being able to come down and, you know, arrest you and try you without an indictment from a grand jury. So in other words, this actually went into the amendments, right, Paul?
Yes.
Okay. This one did. And I believe this is the Fifth Amendment, right?
I believe this is the Fifth Amendment.
Right. And so we have this protection that we cannot, they cannot try us for a crime without having an indictment by a grand jury. Right?
Correct. Okay.
Now the 14th Amendment applies this exact same law to the states.
Okay.
I just wanted to point out that a lot of these things, as they were trying to protect themselves from the federal government, well, the states actually were doing things and playing shenanigans with their citizens up until the 14th Amendment. And it just got out of hand because the freemen were then becoming the victims of tyranny by the states, which became the impetus and the urgent need for the 14th Amendment. So anyway, okay, so the seventh.
Seventhly, all common law cases between citizens of different states shall be commenced in the common law courts of the respective states, and no appeal shall be allowed to the federal court in such cases unless the sum or value of the thing in controversy amount to $3,000.
There you go. Now they actually filled in a blank. And interestingly enough, it actually requires that the trial by jury be protected for up to $20.
Right.
Right.
And so I also see here a thread throughout the states, and maybe you can elucidate on this for a moment, the use of the term common law. Because I don't think we're seeing it today, and I'm sure that the audience would probably want to know something more about that.
Well, so common law was the law of the land that each state had declared, but the Constitution never declared common law. And so by injecting this, they wanted to ensure that they would be able to maintain common law at the state and actually create this this threshold before these types of cases could go into the federal court.
Okay. So it was up to the states what, the type of law that they were going to impose.
Correct.
And by nature, it was because of their history and background, was typically common law. We seem to have gotten away from that today.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, we've gotten away from it, but the only state, as in all the states forming, the only state that didn't declare common law as the law of the state was Louisiana. Louisiana, okay. When they came into the Union in the early 1800s, Louisiana declared civil law the law of the land.
Okay.
And this, you got to remember that these restrictions regarding common law were only placed upon the federal government. And until the 14th Amendment, now all states must offer common law court.
Ah, that's interesting.
And so Louisiana has never been properly forced into, getting rid of its civil law court system and enforcing common law cases, because all the privileges and immunities that were guaranteed to a U.S. citizen now had to be applied at the state level. So anyway, okay.
All right. Eighthly, in civil actions between citizens of different states, every issue of fact arising in actions of common law shall be tried by jury if the parties or either of them request it.
And now it is demanded. It is demanded that all trial be done by jury. And as a matter of fact, except in Louisiana, they're still allowing a court. I think that there are cases where if the defendant wishes to waive his right by trial by jury, but it is always up to the defendant.
Okay.
Right.
Ninthly, Congress shall at no time consent that any person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall accept any title of nobility or any other title or office from any king, prince, or foreign state.
Foreign state. So this actually became, because it was already in Article 4, but right. This actually was aggrandized into the 13th Amendment in focusing this concept of an office of trust or profit by any foreign state or foreign body.
You know, the other thing about the original 13th Amendment, and I think it's in the Constitution, is that they're not allowed to receive emoluments.
Correct.
Or benefits from a foreign state or a foreign body. I wonder how we'd clean out Congress if we applied that today. Okay. Ready for the 10th?
Yep. Go ahead.
All right. That no standing army shall be kept up in time of peace unless with the consent of 3/4 of the members of each branch of Congress, nor shall soldiers in time of peace be quartered upon private houses without the consent of the owner.
There you go.
All right. 11th. Congress shall make no laws touching religion or to infringe the rights of conscience.
Okay.
12. Congress shall never disarm any citizen unless such as are or have been in actual rebellion.
So there you go. So in other words, they want to, I mean, they don't talk about mental capacity. They don't talk about, you know, anything, even regarding, you know, criminal behavior. They literally say it's, you know, you cannot disarm somebody unless they've actually been in a rebellion against government.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And so at this point, that's it, that there's no more amendments or anything else. And so therefore, we have now concluded the New Hampshire ratification debates, which leaves us with the Rhode Island. Now, the Rhode Island is a little bit lengthy. And Rhode Island, when they, you know, came to the party, they, you know, they wanted to prove that they could come up with their own amendments here. And so this was done on May 29th, 1790, when they kind of formulated this ratification. So in other words, the federal government had been operating for 2 years by the time Rhode Island decided to come. Now, if I remember correctly, the Bill of Rights had already been ratified as Rhode Island was coming into, or just about getting ready to be ratified as Rhode Island was coming into the, becoming a part of the compact as a party to the Constitution. So, anyway, so let's go ahead and jump into the first of the of the listings here. So basically, and I'll start it off with, because second, they have the Second Amendment that's actually written out. But the first one, in that there are certain natural rights. This is what Rhode Island is requesting as amendments to the Constitution, in that there are certain natural rights of which men, when they form a social compact, cannot deprive or divest their posterity, among which are the enjoyment of life and liberty, with the means of acquiring, possessing, and protecting property, and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Okay, then the Second Amendment. So I'll let you go ahead with this, but actually I've got a comment. When we start looking at some of these types of amendments, it was really clear, and in this one right here, they talk about natural rights, the of acquiring property and being able to, you know, provide for themselves. Every time I see these things, it, you know, the thing that jumps out at me are HOA rules and, you know, other laws regarding private property. Now, I'm going to go down a rat hole on this, but I know, Paul, you're in the process of writing a petition to demand the right to be able to have and raise your own chickens.
Right.
Right.
That's correct.
And so it's unfathomable to these men back then that government would be ever in a position to take away your own property rights so that you could not provide for yourself and become dependent upon others to feeding yourself. It was just beyond their comprehension. Government, that would be total tyranny as far as we're concerned. So go ahead and read the second one. We got about 40 seconds before the next break. Go ahead.
that all power is naturally vested in and consequently derived from the people, that magistrates therefore are their trustees and agents and at all times amenable to them.
Now, to be clear, the magistrates, as they go through the ratification debates, the magistrates is not a judge. It is not a monarch. The magistrates are the sovereigns in our new society and our new government are our legislators, because they have the power to create the law to levy upon us. And so it is the court's job to determine whether the law has been violated, and or a jury's job to do that, as well as, you know, the enforcement being done by the sheriff, the, you know, the execution, the militia, executing the laws and so forth. So I bring this up because it's becoming another one of those bones of contention of doctrines of magistrates. Our magistrates were completely severed into three branches, but we'll be right back after this promo. So please stay tuned.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're back, and actually this is our last segment, so time flies when you're having fun, huh, Paul?
Yeah, it does. Okay, so are we on two or three now?
Actually, we're on the third one.
Okay. Third, that the powers of government may be reassumed by the people whenever it shall become necessary to their happiness. That the rights of the states respectively to nominate and appoint all state officers and every other power, jurisdiction, and right, which is not by the said Constitution clearly delegated to the Congress of the United States or to the departments of government thereof, remain to the people of the several states or their respective state governments to whom they may have granted the same, and that those clauses in the said Constitution which declare that Congress shall not have or exercise certain powers do not imply that Congress is entitled to any powers not given by the said Constitution. But such clauses are to be construed as exceptions to certain specified powers or as inserted merely for greater caution.
Okay. So again, another 10th Amendment. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that they wanted to include, that the powers of government may be reassumed by the people whensoever it shall become necessary to their happiness.
Right.
Now, okay. What's interesting is, if you think about it, the Communist Revolution could have easily undermined. So this amendment was never really taken to heart because, folks, we would have been vulnerable to a Bolshevik revolution and allowed the people to assume, you know, their authority again and literally change this government into a communist government. So in some ways, we think how nice it would be, you know, that the people actually could take back government, but this didn't actually pass. And that's a good thing, because when we look at today, you know, based on our education system, the worst thing that could happen is allowing the Bolshevik Revolution to move forward, where the people seize power again and overthrow the Constitution and inflict a communist state of wokeness upon us. Right.
Let me add something to that. It's when you say, people may not understand when you say, when the people take power. But what you're probably referring to is what happens, which we call the tyranny of the majority.
Yes.
When people act using what is so commonly and loosely used as a democracy, which we are not.
Right.
And so that's why we set up a Republican form of government. And the other important thing to know is the people with the Constitution do have power to take their government back.
Right.
And we have it if we know it and are willing to use it.
Right.
Okay. And okay. We just have those protections. We've got powers to enforce the Constitution. And one of the things that I never hear typically in the news is two questions. One, is it constitutional? I don't hear that. You know, when I hear about something going on in, and the other thing is, and I was visiting our state legislature last week on an issue of it's called gender affirming care, which I call child butchery. But here's a question: what is the constitutional solution? That's another thing that people don't ask. So here's what happens: sometimes we think we need to make legislation when all we really need to do is enforce the Constitution.
Right. The first question that should be out of everybody's mouth is when government is doing something, you have to ask, has that power been delegated? Does the federal government or state government have the power to seize control and to basically dictate what happens to your children? Have we given them the ability to take away our parental rights? And overwhelmingly, folks, we never did. We have never granted them. They've come in a back door with Child Protective Services by the federal government, started assuming these powers, and next thing you know, they're now actually seizing control and raising your children and telling you, you have no control over this anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is a power not delegated. And so right. This is why, you know, if you really want to take on and eradicate the education system, we have to use First Amendment petitions to do so. So anyway, so go ahead. What's the next one?
Number four.
Right.
That religion or the duty which we owe to our Creator and the manner of discharging it can be directed only by reason and conviction and not by force or violence. And therefore, all men have an equal, natural, and unalienable right to the free exercise of religion according to the dictates of conscience, and that no particular religious sect or society ought to be favored or established by law in preference to others.
Okay. And this was a restriction on the federal government to not be able to take a preference. Even though Rhode Island had its own state church, they didn't want the federal government to be able to pick what church and what doctrine would become religious. But even more important is that they recognize the Creator here, you know, of what we all owe the Creator for, you know, for our rights, our inalienable rights, and so forth. Anyway, go ahead. The fifth one.
That the legislative, executive, and judiciary powers of government should be separate and distinct, and that the members of the two first may be restrained from oppression by feeling and participating the public burdens. They should at fixed periods be reduced to a private station, returned to the mass of the people, and the vacancies be supplied by certain and regular elections in which all or any part of the former members to be eligible or ineligible as the rules of the Constitution of Government and the laws shall direct.
Okay.
Now, this is a mouthful, but I think essentially what it's saying that your legislators, you know, Congress should live under the laws it creates instead of making exemptions for themselves or special privileges.
That's
for themselves.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Ready for six?
Go ahead. Yep.
Okay. That elections of representatives in legislature ought to be free and frequent, and all men having sufficient evidence of permanent common interest with and attachment to the community ought to have the right of suffrage, and no aid, charge, tax, or fee can be set, rated, or levied upon the people without their own consent or that of their representatives so elected, nor can they be bound by any law to which they have not in like manner assented for the public good.
Right. Okay, so what they're actually doing in Rhode Island is Rhode Island was one of those states that actually gave the power to vote. They didn't have poll taxes. They didn't have limitations on who could vote. And so they wanted, and this amendment literally came much later after the 14th Amendment, when we passed the amendment to no longer allow poll taxes to exist in any election. So okay. Some of these things, you know, Rhode Island was kind of leaning because they were very liberal. Now they've gone despotic. Anyway.
Okay. That all power suspending laws or the execution of laws by any authority without the consent of the representatives in the legislature is injurious to their rights and ought not to be exercised.
Right. So you cut out there really quick. So let me read that again. That all power of suspending laws or the execution of laws by any authority without the consent of the representatives of the people in the legislature is injurious to their rights and ought not be exercised. In other words, they're basically saying that Congress cannot invoke martial law, that they wanted the state legislatures to be able to say, you know, we're going to maintain civility and not, you know, suspend your right of habeas corpus, your right to a speedy trial, and these other protections that they wanted to ensure that all people would have. Interesting. Okay, so 1 minute left, and we can cover the eighth and then go from there.
Okay, that in all capital and criminal prosecutions, a man hath a right to demand the cause and nature of his accusation, to be confronted with the accusers and witnesses, to call for evidence and be allowed counsel in his favor, and to a fair and speedy trial by an impartial jury of his vicinage without whose unanimous consent he cannot be found guilty except in the government of the land and naval forces, nor can he be compelled to give evidence against himself.
Okay, now keep in mind, folks, that this is 2 years after Congress had been functioning and that the Bill of Rights have already gone out. So what they're doing by making these recommendations, some of these things were already being ratified as the Bill of Rights. And so in some cases, I think that these state legislatures like Rhode Island and some of these other states have made these amendments, felt obligated to, you know, kind of restate or reaffirm the need for these. So folks, Paul, we're out of time, and what we'll do is tomorrow is Feedback Friday, so we'll try to, you know, pick this up on Monday or as soon as we can get back with Paul. Paul, thank you for being with us. And folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.